Okay, Rabbi Isai, today's daf in Masechet Nedarim, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Memchet. Put your brains to work, just like the daf is Merames, and let's go from the Mishnah at the bottom of Mem Zayin Amud Beit, and continue in our investigation of how people who were shutafim in something, how they get along when they're answering each other. So let's take a case where people are us or one or the other, and now they have to go to shul. Now the question is, can they go to shul? How exactly does that thing work? I mean, what if they want to walk into the Beis HaMikdash? I mean, is all Klal Yisrael shutafim in the Beis HaMikdash? And then they won't be able to go to the Beis HaMikdash. That's pretty bad. What's the deal? Says the Mishnah, Harini Alecha Acher. So look, a person can make himself usher on himself and on the other person, right? This is just an introduction. There's no chiddush over here, other than, of course, to remind us that it depends what kind of cherem we're talking about. We have to be talking about a cherem, obviously, that is not charmei kayanim, but that is the type of cherem that is going to be usher. So in the Galil, they don't know from charmei kayanim. In those days, it wasn't Barnea's neighborhood yet. So because of that, it was a davar pashut that it was referring to the Beis HaMikdash cherem, and therefore he would be also about no. Hare ata lai cherem. So then the no there is also. What if he says both? Harini alecha v'ata lai. So now shneim asurim. Okay, so here's the question. What happens if shneim are asurim? So we know that there is a concept called the tzibur's property. In other words, let's say the classic example of this is Ole Bava. So Ole Bava went and they put in a lot of money in the digging of the wells along the way and then in the building of the Beis HaMikdash and so on, right? So this took a tremendous amount of government money in the end because they were supported, remember, the whole time also from the government back in Persia. Who owns that exactly? So even though the money was given to them for Nihul, so you would think, okay, so maybe it's like those 40,000 people that were involved. No, they were mafkir. Now, to say hefkir doesn't mean whoever wants to can take it. But if you are mafkir something so that all who need it can use it at any time, that's a hefkir. But who owns it? If no one can be zoche in it. So what that happens, it becomes a property that doesn't have a particular baalim, and therefore there is no problem of isurei hanah. It's called the national property, so to speak. It's owned by the tzibur. So that's a completely different type of ownership. It's not a partnership. It's like we have the idea today of corporate ownership, and we have, depending on the governmental structure, we can have federal ownership and so on. There's such a concept of tzibur ownership. And therefore, since they are not, neither of them are particularly owning anything, so shneim mutarim b'davar shel Olei Bavel, anything that was made, therefore, for instance, by Olei Bavel, where we have this concept, is not really being nene from anyone else. So this is not a partnership at all. Because think about it. If it were a partnership and the partners get together, then they should be able to sell it, right? Can anybody sell this? No. So what kind of partnership is it? So it isn't viewed as a partnership either. So basically, it's set aside as something that is muchan for whoever needs it at the time to use it, and it's theirs. Okay, so then everybody would be unable to answer on anyone else, obviously. This is not because of liens or anything else that a kainim can take off. But they would be asur b'davar shel otah'ir, something which really is public property. So what is that? Public property is a concept that is a real ownership. The proof of the pudding is that the city can sell the property in the city. Now, there's a special concept called in Lashon HaKodesh, in terms of the Gemara, we don't have a city council, we have Zayin Tuvei Ha'ir. So to speak, the seven finest people in town. And they're the ones that are given the rishus, and if they determine, and we had in the Gemara elsewhere, we're talking about this concept, sometimes it has to be, but my don't Anshei Ha'ir, you have to call a public public gathering in order for the Shiva Tuveir to be able to sell something of the city. But that is ownership, and there's really partnership. So every member of the Tzibur is a partner. So now if you want to go to Shul in a place like that, and you're Asur Bana to members in the Shul, you got problems. Because that, if you hold like the Rabbanan, then that's going to be a serious issue. Because remember, we can't say if you hold like the Rabbanan, Zenichmas Satov Shalo, Zenichmas Satov Shalo. Now, what's interesting is that the Rambam, who paskins like Rabbi Yosef ben Yaakov, therefore it should be mutter, right? But when it comes to public property, he says they're not allowed to go, they're not allowed to use the shul. And of course, as the Ran puts it, from the Rajba, what do you mean? He's giving the shtar to two people who are tearing it from opposite sides. Rabbanan Rabbi Yosef ben Yaakov, he gives half of the shtar to the Rabbanan, half of the shtar to Rabbi Yosef ben Yaakov. How does he get away with this? So the Rambam ends up apparently contradicting himself. Now, I mean, I think that it's pretty clear that if we have a concept of this idea of a specifically expanded concept of Breira, which we already saw Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that idea does not apply to a shul. And because there's never a moment at which there's a kinyan that people agree to a particular way in which they're going to buy it. The point is, how about if you move into town later? So how are you kaina? You're chalik in the Beit HaKnesset, right? So it's not the same at all. You can't say, we bought it l'chatchila so that this person who just moved in yesterday, when we bought it 300 years ago, we bought it with the understanding. That's not called expanded Breira, right? And therefore, the Rambam is saying over there in Achinami, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov wouldn't have applied it. Now, of course, he's going to have to deal with the Gemara that brought this as a riot before, which was saying that you're not allowed to go into the shul against Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Fine, okay, but that's part of the whole sugya. But as you can see, things get exciting. The more data we get, the more exciting things get. Okay, so in any event, let's define what we mean. What do we mean by the idea of Olei Bava? What's the concept of Olei Bava? Ezu Delver Shel Olei Bava. Strange way to refer to things. But it actually has a historical basis. What we mean by Olei Bava are things like the Har HaBayit, the Azoras, or the waterworks that were there in order for people to be able to be Ola to the Beis HaMikdash. Those are called Olei Bava. When we mean public property of Otah Ha'ir, what is that? That would include the Rechava. Remember, the Rechava is the place where everybody would gather. We would bring out the Orain, even if it was a Tainis. So that is bought with public funds. The Merchatz. So the Merchatz at that time was similar to a library nowadays, right? A library is obviously there. It's something that the city invests in for the benefit of the people. In those days, people didn't have ways to wash themselves, and the city would invest in a public bath. So that was the Merchatz. The Beit HaKnesset, the Teva, that you put the Sefer Torah on, the Sfarim themselves. And therefore, all of those things are actually owned by people. Now, the Mishnah says something very weird. V'hakotev chalkol ha'nasi. Whoa, what does that mean? Somebody, sounds like it's saying that if someone would give his rights to the things in the city, to the Nasi, that then they would become Aser. That's weird. Well, why would that be? Now, what we're going to see is what it really means is there's always a way out of this problem. The way out of this problem is, as we said before, if two people are usher in the other, so, or we had the case where someone was very worried about an ex-friend of his who didn't have what to eat, because he could give it to somebody else. We had the people that were in the caravan. He could give it to another member of the caravan, and then the person could take it. So basically what the Mishnah is saying is, just like there's an idea of public property that we're discussing over here, and then there's another idea of made up public property, which is the idea of Olei Bavel, in which there isn't even an ownership per se, there is also a concept of a Nasi ownership, right? Now, that isn't to say that the Nasi has some type of made up ownership, but it means that there is a way that the Nasi could be Kena, as we'll see. So what the Mishnah is really saying is, you know, like when you're going on the road and there's nothing to do and you can give it to the other person. So they have a way out. These two guys can't go into shul. But if each one of them is, he gives his rights to the Nazi, you can do that, because then the public ownership is now, in a sense, that has provided you rights. Those rights are ultimately owned by the Nazi if you cede them to the Nazi. Okay, we'll talk about it more in the Gemara, but that's what the Mishnah really means to say, even though it puts it in a way that seems very confusing. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, what are we talking about Nazi? There's no difference, really, between a Nazi or anyone else. The reason that we mention a Nazi, because we already saw in the caravan you can give it to anybody, I thought, why can't you cede your rights to somebody else? The difference is that if you write out a contract to a Nazi, or you write a contract to just another person, what makes that real? What is the act that allows you to cede rights to someone else? I mean, where's the kinyan? That's the difference. That if you kotev l'nasi, you do not have to be mizake it to the Nazi. So the Nazi has an additional koyach of kinyan, not of ownership, but of kinyan. Masha Enkein, if you give it to somebody else, you give it to a Hedyet, the same idea would work, but the problem is, how do you give it over to him? So you'd have to make some type of kinyan, kinyan suder, whatever, some type of chazaka. But in any event, over here, there's a question, by the way, how this works, right? So would you be able to do this, let's say, in the case of the Mishnah we had before? So you have that caravan Mishnah, and we're talking about, and what happens if nobody else is there, just you and the other guy, and he's Usur Bahana. What do you do there? So could you give it to the Nasi there? Like, I mean, if you don't need to be Mizaket, the fact that nobody else is there shouldn't be a problem. So instead of putting it on a stone and giving it a hefker, that's a really weird hefker, like, is it possible to actually give something to the Nasi? Or is this different? Because since it is public property, and when I say the made-up public property, and the Nasi is the made-up public in that sense, because that's the concept of Malchus, so in Achinami, many of the Rishonim learn that this entire idea is only in terms of transferring your rights to the use of that type of property to the Nasi. But if you have something of your own, I mean, when you get announced, I do hereby grant this to the Nasi, I mean, how would you be getting it? So therefore, this would not be Nogia, the previous Mishnah at all, according to this. Now, there's the Rosh learns that it's even more than that. This doesn't follow automatically that since the Nasi is a made-up public, so to speak, therefore you could cede it to him. This is a specific takana that the Rabbanan made in order to provide for this type of issue, that the Nasi is able to be zeicha in these cases where people have a problem of utilization. That's what it's talking about, but it certainly doesn't mean that if somebody, no, we're talking about Gershi, we're talking about where he writes a shtar, but just writing a shtar doesn't mean anything. How would someone be zeicha? To the Nasi, writing the shtar is enough. And what's interesting is that some learn you don't even need, the Ritva learns you don't even need a shtar. You could just, once there's this takana of the Nasi, you could just get up and say, I do hereby cede, without a shtar, without any kinyan. Okay, v'chachomim amrim? No, there's no such thing as a special right of a Nasi. The truth is, you're still going to need someone there to make a kinyan. But the only reason that we mention the Nasi is because who are you going to trust? You give your rights to someone else. So then what happens? If he gets mad at you, so he'll use those rights and get you, kick you out of everything. Get out of here. I'm not going to trust anybody. So because of that, for the Nasi, it's like too cheapo, you know, to be able to do something like that. You have to worry about the Nasi. It's not his derech to become, it looks bad on Twitter, you know. I mean, it's all you need to do. So he's not going to do that. So therefore, you trust the Nasi. But otherwise, it's the same, except that no one would do it. Rabbi Yehuda, amen. Let me tell you something. In the Galil, now this, basically Gavi can tell us, you don't even need to give it to the Nasi. And that's because in the Galil, kvar katfu avoteihem al yedeihem, in the Galil, the generations, the early generations, made a takana, all of the rights to these public things, public works, they're all automatically given to the Nasi. Now, Gavi is not a good example of this because, as we'll see, the basis of this is the fact that the people in the Galil were big fighters. Everybody had to be Emet al Shalom. So they used to get into fights all the time. So they decided, instead of having all of these problems, let's have an easy way out. And they gave it to the Nasi up front, realizing that this is a problematic society. Okay. Says the Gemara. All right. So now what are we saying here? That if both of them are usher, then they can't go into the Beit HaKnesset and so on. And then the Mishnah writes this weird thing, which sounds like you're saying that anybody who writes to the Nasi their rights, then they can't go in. What would that mean? I mean, why am I mitzer? Why would it be usher? This is called synchronization. Okay? Now that there's recent data, amazing data, that is a tremendous giloy of what it means when we say kulam b'chochma asita. Remember that we say kulam b'chochma asita, that means that all things in the olam are linked with the chochma of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the fields, the mathematics. That these are real links. We're literally immersed in this incredible chokhma. So now the question is, if you take a look at the mathematics of synchronization, it turns out that there's a subset in any synchronous working which fits into its own separate subsynchronicity that is not part of the overall pattern. It's a very strange result of that math. Now the question is, okay, I mean, that's the math. Does it define nature? So they just published, I think this is like a month ago, they just published this incredible, beautiful research on fireflies. Right? So now they took long nighttime photographs, videos of blinking fireflies. And sure enough, there's a precisely defined mathematical subset of those fireflies that blink in a different synchronicity than everything else. Where the heck does that come from? I was like, beyond belief. So even in the Daf Yomi, you have these weirdos shaking coffee cups back and forth and so on. You're like, hey, there we go. Anyway, what would the Mishnah mean? Now that we've had our Yichud Hashem for the moment, what would the Mishnah mean if it says that if you give it to the Nasi, you become Aser? Why would that be? Of course, that's not what it means. It's taking for granted that you understand. What do you do? Matakanatam, what do you do if you have people that are Aser on each other? That's what it's saying. Yichtavu chalkal Nasi. It's recommending that you do that. And then Rabbi Yehuda says, doesn't really mean the Nasi. Echad katev l'Nasi, echad katev l'Hedyot. It's all the same giving up your rights to the Nasi or to anyone else. Ma ben katev l'Nasi. The katev l'Hedyot, ha katev l'Nasi, ain't sarich l'zakot. Va katev l'Hedyot, sarich l'zakot. V'chachamim omrim echad zeh, tzrichin l'zakot. Lo dibru b'Nasi, ela b'hoved. That's how we worked it out. And what is the chiddush of that, according to the Chachamim? This is what the Ron asks. According to Rabbi Yehuda, yes, a tremendous chiddush. The chiddush is that the Nasi does not need zechiyah. But what is the chiddush according to the Chachamim? We've already had two mishnayos about this, about what to do when something is also, you can give it to somebody else, right? So there's mishnah's not adding anything if you're saying echad Nasi. And he explains that it's adding a great deal because you're going to continue to go to shul. So when you said, I cede my rights to the Nasi, so what are you doing here? Well, I mean, the Nasi also would allow me to come here. Right? So isn't that similar to Beit Choron? I mean, what a fake out. You didn't cede anything. You're going to go to shul like you always go to shul. You're going to get an aliyah. You're going to read from the Sefer Torah. All of these things you gave away your rights to. How are you doing it? That's the Chiddush. That in this case, we don't view it as Ha'aroma, that it really is a cessation, and that you have in mind that you're going to be Zeicha through the other person being Mevater to you, the Nasi, not the guy that asked you Bahana'ah. Fine. That's a Chiddush, says the Ran. And it is a big Chiddush, even Aliba the Chachamim. Okay, now, the next part discusses Gavi's neighborhood. Rav Yehuda Eimer, in Anshei HaGalil, Tzrichim Lezakon, Shekvar Katvu Avotehem, Al Yedehem. Tanya, Rav Yehuda says, listen, those people up in the Galil, I mean, take a look at everybody fighting each other in Tzfat over there, then you have these Hasidim and those Hasidim, a disaster. So what happens if they answer themselves on one another? Are you not Rimana Azem, he said? That's why there's so many Bote Knesset in Tzfat. Everybody who got in Asher Bana had to build his own Bote Knesset, right? So what happened was, is that the Doros, the early Dorot got together, and they made a Takanat HaKahal, basically, that they would all give their rights up to the Nasi. Amdu Avoteihem v'katfu chelkeihem l'Nasi. And that way, you can never Asher anybody in using those rights. Now, this brings us to a very special moment in history, in which we introduce, there we go, we introduce the next Mishnah.
Zog the Heleka Mishnah.
Hamudar Ana'am Echaveiro. So now, here's another interesting question. Of course, this was an issue that we discussed earlier, was the famous Maisa of Beit Horon. Here we finally get up to the Mishnah of the Maisa of Beit Horon. So the concept of Beit Horon is the idea that it's clear that what is being done is a ha'arama ba'alma. It isn't serious. The question is, we just had the Mishnah, which as the Ran explained, is telling us that we don't have a chash that this is ha'arama. So how exactly do we determine that something is not really serious? Remember, we've been speaking about this issue, Benogea, the tour from Meiser, where somebody wants to be Mafkir the Kerem, and we talked about the Takona, that this would be the reason that it has to be for 3 days, and that this would be the reason, according to the end of the sugya, why you needed to have three people, because that way one of them can be Zeicha, the other two will be Aiden, and people will be afraid to do it. Now, the question is, okay, over there we understand that the financial rewards are the indication that we're talking about Ha'aroma. What would be the case of Gabe Nidorim? So here's the idea, which we discussed earlier. Hamudar ha'na'am ha'vero ve'ino ma'yochal notno la'achir l'shum matana v'ala muterbo. So it could be given to somebody else. This is a repetition of that idea we had before on Mem Gimel. And here, we're repeating it as an introduction to the actual Maisa of Beit Horon that we mentioned before. So over here, there was a big problem. The father and son were alienated, and the son is marrying off his son. And he wanted very much to have his father be at the wedding. So he said to a friend of his, I'm giving you over this chatzer v'su'uda for the specific purpose. I want my father to be able to come to the wedding. So the guy said, well, if they're really mine, I mean, you're claiming you're giving it to me. So if they're really mine, I'm giving them over to Hegdash. The guy said to him, are you insane? I said to you, I said I'm giving it to you because I want Abba to come. So what good does it do me if you go and give it to Hegdash? You think I'm giving away this entire beautiful Sa'udah and everything so that you should be able to give it to Hegdash? No way. Oh, my Lord, you know, of course, I understand why you gave it to me. Who do you think you're fooling? You gave it to me, Natatali Echelcha, for one purpose, because you want to have fun, okay? So you give it to me, Sheteata V'avicha Ochlim V'shotim U'mitratzim Zalazah. You guys want to get high, you know, and then make up, and everything is good, and everything is cozy-wozy. And meanwhile, who is the one that should be responsible for being over on the nether, and so on and so forth, and he should burn for it while you have fun? That's good old me. Thank you very much. What do you think I am, crazy? That's why I said, let it be Hegdash. You just exposed yourself by saying, I never give it to you. Exactly. Amru Chachamim. Well, the truth is, kol matana, She'ina. She imigdishat emekudeshat ena matana. Giving a person a matana, the Kool-Aid acid test is what would happen if he says this is hegdish. So if he says this is hegdish, you start yelling, what are you, crazy? I never gave it. Exactly. So then that shows the ha'arama. Now, this is not really strictly true, obviously, because I can give you a matana manat lahachzir, can't I? If I give you a matana manat lahachzir, let's say a lulav. So I give you my lulav and esrik to use, matana manat lahachzir, that should be lachem, and so on. And you say, okay, harei mukdesh l'shamayim. And I yell at you and you say, what are you, crazy? What am I going to use? Where's my lulav and esrik for the rest of the circus? So what is it? It's so now it's bato because it was a fake. It wasn't a fake. It was a matana manat lahachzir. So the point here is that when it's saying is, actually, it's interesting. The Ran has a different girsa. The Ran's girsa is kol matana she'ina she'im higdisha eina mekudasha. Right? So he says the meaning of the words are any matana which is not a matana. Kol matana she'ina. And how do we know that? She'im higdisha eina mekudasha. So what that means is that any matana that is not what it purports to be. So if it's a matana manat lahachzir, so obviously that's what it purports to be, and then that's what it is. But if this purports to be a matana that is real, I'm giving this over to you, and it isn't what it is, then that's the meaning. Kol matana she'ina. It's a very interesting girsa. That's how he explains it. Because like this, you read it, she'ina she'im higdisha te mekudesha, but that's not how to read it. Okay, in any event, the idea, of course, is that what we're talking about is the problem of ha'arama. We're not talking about some type of yesod in the nature of ownership, meaning that ownership that isn't going to allow you to be magdash or shamayim is not ownership, because that is definitely not true. You can certainly make tana'im. Suppose you give that, like the Yerushalmi puts it, suppose you give someone a gift on condition that he doesn't give it to Hegdash. That's not a good gift. Why wouldn't it be a good gift? It's just a condition like any other condition. If I don't like your kids and I say, I'm giving this to you as a gift on condition that you don't give it to your kids, that's not a good gift. Perfectly good gift. So a stipulation is a stipulation. So now the question, of course, is over here. The guy actually said, I'm giving it to you in order for dad to be able to eat here. So this, we're going to have to discuss how exactly do we see this as ha'arama. Gershi, I hope you haven't disappeared. We've been so excited to have you here. Come back. It isn't. There we go. I know how it starts. It starts with the name. Then the name disappears. Then the next 3 weeks, the name is disappearing. No. No more. So in this case, it's not going to be a matana. Ask the Gemara. This is very strange. I mean, you're telling me a halacha. What's the opening of the Mishnah? You start with an introduction. If you have a problem of Yisrael, I know you can give it to another party. That's what you say. And then you bring me the Maisa of Beit Charon that says that you can't. It's like, now, obviously, it's not really a contradiction. I mean, because the guy did say, Beferish, I'm giving it to you because I want Abba to come. I mean, okay, that's not the same. I mean, of course, we all understand that if you're going to give it to the other guy in the caravan and say to him, well, I'm not really giving it to you. I'm only giving it to you so you can give it to so-and-so. No, that's not the same as a contradiction to the opening of the Mishnah. But in terms of the flow, says the Ran, that's the question. The flow doesn't make any sense. First, you say that the solution to problems of Yisuri Ano is a matana to someone else. And then you bring what appears to be an example of a matana, and the matana doesn't help to be matir. Why would you do that? Says the Gemara. Obviously, that means that the Mishnah is constructed as a chisurei mechasra, and it means to define the type of matana. So, v'hachi katani. Yes, if you give it as a matana, so then it can indeed address the problem that you have about hana'ah. But what about im hochiach so far techilato? What if it's clear from what happens at the end that it was never really meant? So then, and in this case, it would be the Tanai itself that indicated that. So that's not considered to be bichlal a matana. So now, okay. So the question is exactly how we're illustrating this, because we bring the Meisen Ami b'Beit Choron, be'achad, taviz sofo mochiach b'tchilato. It was clear from the beginning that was only in order. So this part is not going back on the Reisha. This part is going on the piece that is missing in the Mishnah, namely, ihochiach sofo tchilato. So we're bringing a raya of sofo tchilato, which does not necessarily mean the story, the narrative's end is a raya to the beginning. But it, Yitzi, the phone is nowhere near as exciting. Guaranteed. They think that because they put the camera on low resolution, we don't see anything. So now, the question is, okay, so to what extent is there a mochiach sofo tchilato? So Rava says, oh, well, I mean, that's why this case is a raya that it's not true, because he said so. He said, Hinan lefanecha, alekadesh yavo abba, they're yours, but you have to make sure you understand the nature of my gift. I'm not letting you do whatever you want. But suppose he didn't say, Ella, he didn't say, I'm only giving them to you in order. That's a beferish condition. Well, you can make any tanai you want in a matana. So there I understand that you're certainly not really giving up to somebody else. That's as if you directly give it to your founder. But what if you would have said, Aval Armalay, you know, I'd like you to own the Suda and everything. I'd like my father to come. But you don't say I'm only giving to you on condition that my father can come. So how about then? So Armalay, she yulifanecha, she yavo abba, so that it be possible that my father should become, or viavo is the gears of the rod, and may Abba be able to come. So I didn't make a tanai in the matana. So that what he means there is, I mean, I hope a fine person like you will recognize how wonderful it would be for dad to show up. I know you think that I am alienated from my father, but actually I want him to be able to come. But I didn't make any kind of tanai. So over there, says Rava, since I didn't make it tonight, so I really am giving it to him. I'm taking a chance. I'm saying, I'm assuming that you will invite my father and understand that I'm very much in favor that you should do this, right? So now it's very interesting, because as the Ran brings, we have exactly this case, actually, that we had in Beitza, where a guy says, give so-and-so Arbame Yadzuz, and let him marry my daughter. This was a Matnah Shchid Mira. So what Rava Paskind over there is that he gets the 400, and, you know, if he wants to marry the daughter, that's great. You know, it was a suggestion. It wasn't a stipulation. So, okay, the same thing is true over here. But there's a Lishna Achrina in Rava. Lishna Achrina says it like this. Oh, my Rava, don't think that the reason that the Mishnah has over here an assumption that this is a hocheach sofar triloso, that means that it's the tanai that was hocheach sofar triloso. No, that's the point. Suppose the guy would have said, you think it's different? If the guy would have said, I'm giving it to you and I would like Abba to come. It's not different. It's exactly the same in this case, specifically. You would have thought that if he said, Hein lefanecha sheyavo abba, not ela sheyavo abba. No, even if he said, afil amar, hein lefanecha, yavo abba v'yochal, be so nice, it would still be usher on his father to come. Why? Because this is a special case. And that's why the Mishnah is bringing it specifically as matnat bet choron. It's saying that any case like this boils down to a stipulation. Because even not making a stipulation is, since in the end you even indicate that this is the point, so then it's clear, how are you giving away a wedding? Does that make sense? You've been saving up for this, you're putting in so much money, you're really giving away the wedding. So Bishlama, if you are really ready to take that chance and give it to somebody and hope that way, Bezus Hashem, you'll be able to come. Your father will be able to come. You're a big Bala Muna. So, okay, so that's all right. But if you even indicate that you want your father to come, we see the whole thing as manipulative and a rama'ut, and it counts exactly as a tanai would have counted in a normal case where we wouldn't have su'udato mochachat alav. The fact that you've put in so much, the investment itself is an indication that this isn't real. Now, the Rambam paskins like this, even in the event that you make a subsequent statement, not at the time that you gave it to. In other words, some Rishonim learned that the point is that since su'udato mochachat alav, it's as if you made a tnai in the matana. Okay, but I mean, if you really made the matana, afterwards you could beg the guy to let your father come, but that doesn't change anything because it's not yours. You're just asking him to do you a favor. But the Rambam learns that it's harama, not a tnai, and that it's his gali milsula mafreya, even 2 months later, before the wedding, the day before the wedding, you come over to the guy and say, please remember to invite Abba. So the Rambam says, if you do that, the whole thing is batal. And it's clear that it was Arama Milachatchila. That's the meaning of Su'udato Mochachat Lav, which is a very, very different issue. So now we had another Maisa like this, where someone was trying to control the property that would go to one son over another son. So this guy had two sons. One of his, this is how the Ron explains the whole Maisa, one of the sons was a fine, upstanding citizen. The other son made his living driving around at night, like the Arabs make their living, driving around at night and taking other people's crops from off their fields and selling them. You know? So he didn't like that son very much. So Ahu Gavad Havile Broad, Avishamit Kipi the Kitna. He had a son who would go running around stealing the flax crop from people in town. Now, he didn't want his property to be inherited by that son. So Asmina Lanikseyalai, so he answered his Nechosim. Now, so here is the reason that the Ran has to jazz up the case. Remember before we had the Machlokas, the Ran and the Rajba, about in the event that he said, B'chayai uvamoti, does he answer the Yerusha? So that was a question we dealt with yesterday. Can a person answer something after it goes out of his Rishon? So we brought the case of the Yerusha. So I mentioned to you that it's a Machlokas Rishonim, whether when the Gemara said Yerashena or Lo Yerashena, depending on whether he said B'chayai uvamoti, does it literally mean Yerashena or Lo Yerashena? So the Ran said, no, of course it doesn't literally. How can you make it not to be Yoresh? It would still be yours, meaning the sons. And like the Mishnah says later, that he can give it to his kids. So he could say, look, I don't have a right to be nene from this. And in order to avoid the tovat hana'ah, he's mechuyev to tell his kids, whoever, listen, I'm not really giving anything that's worth anything to me, so don't have a karas teva to me, because if you would do the tovat hana'ah, then you would be nene from the tovat hana'ah, which we saw before, for truma is considered to be of values. You can't do that either. But if you're upfront about it and you say, look, guys, you know, I'm not doing you any favors because this isn't worth a penny to me. You know, so why don't you just go ahead and take it? Is I'm Osir Bano. That's how the Ran understands from the Mishnah. It's obvious that it really is his. We talked about the fascinating idea that something can be yours, even though it would have no value to you, even for Tovat Hana'ah. But the Rashba remembered yesterday, Tainet, that if something has no value, then there's no way that you could be Yorish it, because Yerusha works not with the item, but with the item and its value in order to be able to transfer the ownership of that thing to you. So in this case, therefore, the Ran's got a problem, because the Ran argued on the Rashba. So the Ran says, I don't understand. I mean, the guy wasn't accomplishing anything by saying that it doesn't go to him. He's just answering it by an ah. And therefore, because we'll see that he really wanted to figure out a way that the guy would own it. So according to the Ran, he does own it. And if he owns it, he could give it to his children right now. So we'll see that then the whole Gemara won't make sense. Therefore, the Ran learns that the pshat is, the guy had two sons. He wanted to give all of his property to his good little boy who is learning in Kailal and so on. And then his friends come to him. Now, wait a minute. You don't want to do that. Because what happens if your robber son has a son who becomes a big Talmud Chacham? So what's he supposed to do now? He won't be able to get granddaddy's tefillin. I mean, I understand, you know. Don't you want to be Mahana, that son, that grandson of yours? What are you going to do then? Yavi Barbarach Tzubin Rabban and Mai. So now, according to the Ran, you see, this doesn't make any sense because the father could give it to him right now if it's really his after this grandfather's death. Oh, Marlahan. So he said, you know, that's a good point. So I'll tell you what. Why don't we allow my flaxy son, the guy who would steal the flax, why don't we allow my flaxy son to be kona it for the sole purposes of giving it to my grandson if he turns out to have a grandson who is a Talmud Chacham? So, I'm giving it to him so that he should be able to be makne it to that person. So what's the din in that case? So over here, it's very similar. You're giving something to someone that you don't want that someone to have any rights to. Your flaxy son, he shouldn't have any rights to it. But he should have rights to it only vis-a-vis his ability to give something of it to his own son, who's a Talmud Chacham. So does that work? Similar to the case of Beit Horon. What's the din? So in Pumbedisa, they say, well, this is an example of Knei Amanat Laknot. You can only be kona this thing in order to be makna it to someone else. That's not a kinyan. Because there's never any balut that's yours. To say, you be kona for yourself in order to be kona for someone else. That's not a kinyan. You're not giving him anything. Obviously, you could have someone be zoche in something for someone else. That's an entirely different thing. Then I'm being kona on his behalf. I'm just acting as his yadayim. But over here, you're telling me it should be mine for the sole purpose of my being able to give it to you. Well, that's what this is. And kol kni amanat laknot lo koni, that is not considered to be a kinyan because I am not giving you anything. Now, when I give you my lulav and esrog as a matana amanat lahachzir, I am giving you something. I want you to own it so long as you're going to be yotze the mitzvah. And then there's a condition. The condition is that you have to give it back to me, and that's what makes the kinyan good up front. Fine, but that's okay. I'm giving it to you as a real kinyan. The fact that it's limited in time, that's not a problem. But in this case, I'm not giving you a darn thing. I'm saying, no, you have no rights to anything. Don't you dare wave my lulav and esrog. Oh, no. You can only be kena my lulav and esrog in order to give it to somebody else. So then I don't have any rights. In which case, this is not a kinyan at all. Says Reb Nachman, I disagree. You see this from the very nature of kinyanim. Let me ask you something. How do you make a kinyan chalipi? What do? We call this kinyan suder, right? How do you make a kinyan suder? So you go ahead and you give the guy your handkerchief. He picks up the handkerchief, and then that is the kinyan, right? So you're going to make chalipin. We're pretending that we're exchanging the handkerchief for something else. And this takes the place of the mashiach, right? So this is a formal type of real chalipin. Real chalipin is barter. So the moment that one person takes his thing that was bartered, the other person is automatically going to the other thing. And you don't need both of them to do mashiach. Only one of them does mashiach. So we do the same thing as a formal type of chalipin, which is called kinyan suder. So how I want you to be kena a piece of land. So how can I get you to be kena that piece of land where the land may be thousands of miles away? I can go ahead and I can give you something. So I'll give the guy who wants to be kena the land. So he takes out his handkerchief. He gives the one who owns the land his handkerchief. The guy picks up the handkerchief. And then he gives it back to him. So now, what is that? I understand. He doesn't own the handkerchief. He has to give it back, right? And so if he gives it back, that would mean, this is not a matan amanas lahachzir. He doesn't have any use of it at all. And isn't that kni amanat laknot? So you take my handkerchief, almanat, to be makna me, not the handkerchief, to be makna your field to me. So isn't that the essence of chalipin? It's kini almanat laknot, but it doesn't give you any rights to the handkerchief. So you see that that is considered to be a real kinyan, because otherwise, how could it be chalipin? Ravashi, now wait a minute. How do you know that's true? How do you know that if the guy would say, oh gosh, what a nice handkerchief, I think I'll keep it, that then it wouldn't be a kosher chalipin? Remember the case over here in Beit Charon is where the guy is saying, well, okay, then I'll give it to Hekdesh. Suppose the guy would take the handkerchief and say, okay, I'm going to give the handkerchief to Hekdesh. So you're telling me that that's not a good chalipin? Why not? Who says? Show me where it says that. What, the fact that everybody that you know, at every wedding that you've seen them do that little handkerchief trick, they always give the handkerchief back. And what if they didn't? Do you know for sure? Does it say somewhere that then, I mean, you can imagine the tumult at the wedding. Oh my God, he just passed the ksuba. Oh, it would be wonderful. Everybody would get a chance to mess up the wedding, which they love to do. We could speak for hours about whether now is the ksuba kosher or not. They ate him, wasn't a good edus. They didn't do a good khalifa. Unbelievable. No, vikanina. No, this is not vikanina. It was vikanina. Okay, great. So it would provide a lot of fun, but could you actually prove that that wouldn't be good? No. I don't know. Uman Lamelon, so who says? I love the Lashon, right? And who says, if he keeps the handkerchief, that it would not be a good visa of chalipin? You're bringing a raya from something you don't even know. You know, first prove it to me, then bring a raya from it. Okay, so I don't think that proves anything. And anyway, what you're saying doesn't make sense, all right? So let's even say that you're right. Let's say you have to give back the handkerchief. So what does that prove? When I give you the handkerchief, okay, what happens? At that moment that I give you the handkerchief, the property becomes mine, or the shor becomes whatever it is that you're transferring with the chalipin. So that is not kni amanat lahaknot at some point. We're over there, I understand. There's nothing to support the kinyan. Later on, you're saying, maybe 20 years from now, this guy's son will be a Talmud Chacham. So at that point, when grandpa is long dead, he's giving out this property before he died. So at that point, what effectuates the kinyan? Over there, fine. I mean, I understand that. That may not work. But chalipin? Chalipin is going to be a... Now you're going to say chalipin is a raya that it does work. No, because over there, it's a real kinyan. It's an instantaneous kinyan. I have the handkerchief. You get the property. Over here, there's nothing left. I mean, if you want to compare this to chalipin, so it would be compared to chalipin where the handkerchief disappeared. You know, I mean, that's basically what happened. In this case, halin nichsed hadein leimataykani. When does this grandpa's nechasim become the owned by his flaxy son? Only when his grandson becomes a Talmud Chacham. So he said, then flaxy boy, he can get it in order to give it to my beautiful black-hatted son. Okay, so then if that's the grandson. But at that time, show me, where's the suitor, so to speak? I mean, you're comparing to the suitor. Where's the suitor? Where's the act of kinyan? You're saying that kini amanat lahaknos. I mean, he doesn't want him to have anything with it now, does he? He wants to keep him away from it. I mean, he's basically saying, well, if that never happens, then I'm giving all of my property to my good son. I don't want to give it to my flaxy son. Omale Rava L'Rav Nachman. Now, Rava says to Rav Nachman, I mean, I don't understand. What about the mission of Beit Charon? I mean, in Beit Charon, nobody thought it was a good kinyan. Why are you saying it's a good kinyan? Well, not Beit Charon. What was Beit Charon? I'm giving it to you in order that you should invite Abba. That's what we said. And then we made a big thing about this. No, so basically you were fake out. You were trying to get me to be the one that was going to do the Avera while you... What do you mean? It's perfectly kosher. I'm giving it to you to invite Abba. You're saying that Kni Amanat Laknot is a kosher kinyan. But the Mishnah is saying Kni Amanat Laknot is not a kosher kinyan. The Lokakani. So how do you explain the Mishnah, Reb Nachman? So actually, Reb Nachman would have different approaches to this. Sometimes he would say against this Taina that the idea of Beit Choron, remember, is specifically based on the idea is that the Su'udato Mochachat Alav, like Rava said before, right? He said the whole point is that since in this case the guy has invested so much, we simply don't believe it. That's true. And so, Mamela, this is a problem of a haruma. That's something else. Remember, this relates exactly to the Bachlokas, the Rambam, and the Ran about, so how could and the Rajba, who disagrees with the Rambam, the Farish. How is it that all of a sudden that this is considered to be what? That later, 2 months later, you indicate that you really want your father to be invited, so then it's not, how does that change the Kenyan? It doesn't change the Kenyan. It's Megala that there never was a Kenyan. That's the point. So this has nothing to do with Kenyan Menat Laknot. This has to do with the fact that it's a fake out. There was no Kenyan. So that's a simple solution to the whole issue. And sometimes, Vizimni normally, sometimes Rav Nachman responded by saying that the Mishnah is going according to Rav Eliezer. Now, Rav Eliezer says, Afilu Vitor Aser B'Mudr Hanan. Now, this has absolutely nothing to do with Vitor, does it? I mean, where's the Vitor? There's no Vitor. And over here, this is serious. I mean, his Abba's going to be eating some serious food over here at this wedding. He's just saying that since we know that Alibet Rav Eliezer, we're very machmer in the Yonim of Nedarim. We're more machmer than we are in cases of Dine Mominus. Because Vitor, in terms of Dine Mominus, what does it mean? That by definition, I own this property. Why are you trespassing my property? Forget about a netter, a normal case. Are you allowed to steal things from someone else? So how can you trespass? Isn't that considered to be Gneva? So we see that when it comes to Dine Mominus, the fact that normally people are not going to be makpid on trespassing, and he didn't put up a sign, no trespassing. So that's the reason for the sign, no trespassing. It's not just a warning. It makes it illegal to trespass. If you say otherwise, we're assuming that you don't care. Normal people don't care. If someone has to cut through somewhere, fine. So no big deal. Or you put up a sign, no trespassing, then it becomes us. So that what we're dealing with over here in Nedarim is more chomor than Kinyanim, according to Rav Eliezer. Because even though in terms of Geneva, you're allowed to go through the Geneva is a dina dina mominus. And yet when it comes to Yisra Ano and Neder, he says, no, over there are more machmer. So I think it's true over here. What are you bringing me a raya from Rav Eliezer ben Yaakov of Nedarim? You're going to bring me a raya to dina mominus, whether Kinyan is a... He's much more machmer by Minadorim than he is by Dine Mominus. Beautiful. So if that's the case, you can't bring a riot from Beit Charon, which is not Nogang, Dine Mominus. Lovely. Okay, so then everything changes. None. Now, the biggest issue is that Reb Nachman's going against the Chachomim. It says in the Mishnah, Omru Chachomim, Kol Matana, She'ena Shimikdish Demikdeshes, Eina Matana. What do you mean, Kol Matana? Kol Matana. What do you think the Kol Matana is coming to add? It's making a claw. And it's coming even exactly for this kind of case where you are trying to give something to someone on condition that it's only going to be his to give to his son who's a Talmud Chacham. So it says in the Mishnah, that's according to Chachamim, the Das Rabim, that's not considered to be a matana. So how can you say that kniyam and not laknot for that particular thing? And what if the guy would want to be magdish it? That is not a real matana. Same thing. So doesn't that come to include this case of Flaxy Boy? No, said Reb Nachman to that. The Mishnah is not talking about that. That lotion of coal, that is telling me the lishna batra, the shmaitate, the rava. The Mishnah is coming to talk about that piece that Rava added. Over here, the guy said beferish. No, I'm giving, he said that up front. I'm giving this to you, Ella, in order that my Abba can come, right? So, okay, so what we said before was that if the guy indicates that that's the purpose, so that if that's the case, if he even says, we said later, according to Rambam, even, that is considered not to be a matana. But in normal cases, it would be a matana. That's all that we're saying. So if you said it, let's say, with a tanai, so then there's no problem. just because you can't give it to Kegdish, that doesn't mean anything. And in this case, where the guy is being told, you can have it in order to give it to your son who's a Talmud Chacham, okay, fine. There's no problem. It's certainly not coming to include this case. There's lots of cases in between. We had the Beferish at tonight. We had the mentioning at the time of making the Kinyan. We had the Rambam's case of mentioning subsequent to the Kinyan. That's what we're talking about. But certainly this, says Rav Nachman, perfectly okay. And bringing us to this amazing moment, oh, Sir Richard, Hadron Allah, Hashutafim.
Bli Neder.